Survey.
Survey says.
Ding ding ding. If like, have you given any thought, or are you able to make an immediate decision and tell me where you would go if you had to hole up against the zombie?
I would hide behind him.
Seems like a reasonable
plan. I have a whole plan.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
What's the plan?
Or
if you don't mind sharing.
No, I'll share.
I'm
just not giving directions because
I'm
out of food.
I'm going
to
plan.
So I was asked about vehicles, and so if I did not have my children with me, I would load up my motorcycle and take off.
Sure.
I had a question about that, actually,
yes.
Before you continue. Because you were talking about bringing a van. Depending on how big your motorcycle is, would you bring it with you for short journey?
No.
They're too heavy.
Either or. As much as I love my motorcycle, it would be sad to leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
I would not.
You
wouldn't
try and stuff
it
in the back of the car?
No.
No,
and
it would
so
take up too much room.
I have friends who have a farm out on the peninsula.
Okay.
They raise goats and sheep and rabbits, and currently are raising 2 pigs.
Okay.
Raise most of their own food, have started burying 5-gallon buckets of dry rice and beans
wow.
in their garden because they know they're going to be a popular destination amongst their friends. So,
barring whatever happens?
Yep. They have their own, and they're completely off-grid. And their neighbor,
wow.
like I said, their neighbor's a reloader and a gun collector. And
sounds
they live
like
on top of
good,
a, they
good.
Live on top of a mountain.
Oh wow!
Did it have a ham radio?
I'm an amateur radio operator. Actually, I always have a radio in my car.
That's awesome.
So all you need would be a fence, a really good fence.
Yeah. The thing is, or patrols.
Yeah. Okay.
They have wildlife for food. They have a stocked lake.
Because, I mean, one aspect of that is the further you are from the urban centers, the less zombies, theoretically, you'll have to deal with anyway.
Yep. Yeah, and actually...
they have migratory patterns.
More than... I mean, as much as the firearms are a wonderful protection against zombies, they're a wonderful protection against human predators, which are probably a bigger issue.
Out there?
No, getting there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a friend who stockpiles food. She has a minivan. I have a truck.
Right.
We load it all up,
mm-hmm.
we convoy out, both of us are experienced shooters, my children are all experienced shooters, my oldest, well, she's the least experienced, my oldest son is also an archer. That's the one thing I didn't cover was hand-to-hand weapons, and, a bow is great if you can hit something with it.
Yeah.
And you can make your own arrows, you can make your own bow.
How do you, in convoying, how do you deal with the potential, you know what they dealt with in Stephen King's The Stand, where once the infrastructure collapses, you get all these abandoned cars, and you know, there's a lot of crap on the road between you and where you're going.
Yeah.
There's also an awful
Sorry.
Lot of.
No.
There's also an awful lot of cleared area next to most roads, and
yep.
that's one of the things that you learn. That you train your brain in when you do parkour is that just because the sidewalk's there doesn't mean it's the best route. And so you can just as easily find... Yeah, it's just a matter of minding your tires and minding your clearance.
Creative.
Yeah, and be... Yeah, being
creative.
I mean, clearly a tow cable or a winch or whatever
yep.
on one of the vehicles.
Carry everything you need.
Yeah. The plan that my friends and I all have a meeting place that's somewhere near Kansas, which has the overlap of a prison, a military base, and a couple of Costco loading areas that
nice.
Are all in the same sort of area. And so we've all agreed to meet in that general
that's
vicinity.
That's a long way for you to have to travel.
Well, they're on the East Coast.
Okay.
Some of my friends are on the East Coast. And
wow.
so it's sort of a convergence, and we've decided that an airship is the best route, or a Zeppelin. Joshua pointed out a hot air balloon because
hot
it takes less fuel, but
less
because
fuel, you can make a hot air balloon and raise with wood fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because then you can live on it and you can chill out. You can kind of drift with the wind. You don't have to be on a mission as you are in a plane.
There's a storm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you see it from coming from a while away and
then
avoid
do
it.
What though?
Avoid it.
You.
If you're in a hot air balloon.
You land.
The issue with a hot air balloon is that you have much less control over
yes.
where you go.
Yeah. That's true.
That's why I would lean towards that.
That's
yeah.
one's a better one.
Or just
yeah.
get a pilot's license.
Yeah, you got a lot bigger fuel concern, at least with
that. I mean, I guess that's my thing, is that my plan involves me being able to get wherever I'm going on a half tank of gas.
Right.
Yeah.
That is an important aspect. I mean, if you... That's the biggest thing.
But really,
like
all the gas stations are going to be abandoned, though, right?
Well...
And probably...
Yeah.
But... it, whether that's the big thing is like how much advance notice you have. If people are abandoning shit and freaking out, then you might still have electricity enough to pump gas.
If
you don't, then it's going to be a lot more work. You can still do it.
This is why I compulsively keep my gas tank full. I'm serious. I'm so scared that something's going to happen and I won't be able to gas up.
Like,
well, that's the other thing is where the kind of parkour mentality comes into the whole creative thing is, you know, I have a half tank of gas. Gas station's out. I rob a liquor store for Everclear.
Well, or you have
Everclear is a suitable. You can't get it here, unfortunately.
You have all these abandoned cars around.
Or you siphon out of there. Better than, or actually, I'd probably use rum 151. Better than 150 proof rum is a suitable additive to gasoline. I wouldn't run your car on it by itself; it would burn out your engine. But
it'll get you there.
Yeah, but mixed with your half a tank of gasoline, and they actually during the gas rations, I got this idea during the gas rations of World War II. Sold home distillation kits to make your own grain alcohol additive to up your octane rating of your gas.
That's awesome.
My plan would consist of an urban hideout until things died down to a degree, like make do with as little as possible, some stored water, chemical toilet, and lasting food, and then go find a... I used to work for a guy who had a cabin in basically at the top of Snowfall Pass, and in the winter you could only really get there by snowmobile, and if he wasn't at the top of this mountain, there was like one more cabin above it, so there would be a long, long approach and a lot of other shit with you and whatever was coming. And so yeah, have an immediate plan for surviving the disaster, and if it's not epically bad right away, I'd retreat there immediately.
How survivable is that?
Long term.
Food stores, ability to produce your own food, ability to produce your own tools. Long term.
The one cabin by itself is minimal, but effectively the side of the mountain is a housing development, so you could scavenge for long enough to set yourself up that way or find depending on how isolated you are. I mean, these are people's weekend and vacation homes, so at the best of times, there's not that many people around. And it's near the woods, it's near a lake, so there are other fallbacks. But I mean, yeah, for the practical aspect of it, I'm thinking of, you know, getting through 6 months, not 5 years.
Okay. Yeah, see, I think 5 years.
Sure.
I can check.
At the farm, I mean, literally,
I can't hunt,
thought about
but
retiring
I can
to the farm and just living there full time. You know,
well,
it's that kind of place.
And my plan isn't that, like, everything will be fine in 6 months, but that I can, you know, escape or make a better plan for stage two.
And this brings up a good point. Megan's saying that she can...
I can track.
She can track. She can't hunt. And so... Like, what's a...
That's why I'm going with him. He can hunt, I can track.
What's an ideal group size? Like, what are the essential things that need to be covered in order to...
Obvious, for my plan, it would be minimal. Like, I live in a basement apartment right now that has two doors that are easy to lock, and it has a bar window. It also has doors that can secure most of the rest of the basement off from the rest of the house.
Yeah. If there's no water, there's no running water.
You have enough time to see it coming to fill a bathtub, and that'll give you the food.
Yeah.
And so that's my minimal survival policy, and I could, you know, basically the idea is to lock down as quickly as possible. So if people can get to me, great. But my plan does not involve going out and finding my friends. So. Two or three, me and one or two others tops would be the most that would realistically happen, I would think. Clearly you would want someone to back you up because scavenging is dangerous, and much less so when you're doing it by yourself.
See, and I guess for me, the ultimate size is dependent on what you do. Like, you're talking about maybe halfway across the country track.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd say...
I'm sure as hell not going to want to do that, right?
What you can comfortably fit in your vehicle with their supplies.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a seven-person minivan, drop three of the seats, use the back half for supplies, take four people.
Yeah.
You have somebody always... You could be awake in pairs, 12-hour shifts, however well you travel. I'm talking about shorter distance, which in some ways makes it easier for me to travel with a larger number of people. You know, kind of the joke is, you know, I need enough people I can arm in one person for days. realistically, you know, a lot of it has to do with skills and logistics. How many of you are part of your first aid trip?
Yeah.
How many, you know, best thing you can do in the world, go take the Red Cross for CPR. First aid and CPR. How many in your party know how to procure food? Whatever environment you're going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
How many in your party know how to do basic engine needs?
Well,
especially in your case.
How big is that group of people?
Yeah.
We would have, like, an enclave of people. It would be...
See, and that's what we're like, heading for the mountains, but we
yeah.
have
then you, then you take a bus.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be like, it's a total of 20 or 30 people, but they're all coming from all over the
U.S.
Okay, that's what I was asking.
So it's not an unmanageable group of people, but I would mean if shit goes pear-shaped, you'd probably be better off fucking flying to Kansas than trying
yeah.
to figure out how else to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just depends. You know, we'll probably end up with a similar size group, probably less... On top of the mountains. But
I wouldn't
fight
first.
But they already own 20 acres
yeah.
of private property. There's a clear cut owned by the BLM behind them full of wildlife.
Nice.
And the neighbor who we know owns another 10 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my grandparents own 80 acres near a stream, and they have at least 40 deer, if not more, in their yard at
yep.
a time.
Like,
so,
my buddy has...
I wouldn't want to live with him, though.
My buddy has a house out on the Hood River Canal that would be easy to get into, but it would be shit to defend. The positive aspect of it is that it's far enough from anything urban that you would have very few zombies to deal with, but the big challenge would be getting out there and then locking it down.
Maya and Chloe, do you have any thoughts on this subject?
Do you have a plan?
My work's all trying to figure out the zombie
apocalypse.
I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful that y'all have this conversation. but I am just going to make them, so
Canada, the borders are all secure.
I know how to slip through.
We have milk in a bag.
I can slip through a zombie society. If you turn off all your thoughts, walk through. You need to go through a corridor. You need to go a corridor through. You know, if you've got a giant zombie city between you and the airplane, you can think nothing, you get through.
Do you think you can fool
just
zombies
meditate.
Into thinking you're one of them? Like, would that work with
regular
zombies?
They don't look at people.
How can a zombie tell if you are actually not a zombie?
Well, if they hear thoughts, they will attack you.
Well, they did it in the Shaun of the Dead. They were able to mess themselves up and shuffle and grow and fit in. Because, I mean, if you assume that zombies are stupid, then... Maybe it's just nothing but an animal in this thing that you're attacking them or you're running, so that makes you prey. You know, if they are as simple as a shark, sharks bite things to find out if they're edible. That's stupid. they have a spine and basically a brain stem. They don't really have a brain. And so most of the time when people get bitten and survive, it's because the shark took a chunk and was like, what the hell is this?
That's not tasty.
And so, you know, a lot of what you could pursue about zombies, depending on what kind of zombie we're dealing with, you know, if it's the adrenaline aggro kind, then all bets are off. But if they are truly dead, then they wouldn't have a lot of senses working for them. So it could just be that, you know, movement and blood and what have you provoked them. So it could be that you could slide between their ranks pretty easily if you...
We can't have fear.
If you spend enough time observing them to realize
mm-hmm.
what sets them off.
Mm-hmm. I think what the general consensus in all of our talks is that we need more empirical evidence in order to come to any conclusion. Because
that's the thing, is there's just too many variables to really say, like, this is what I know that we can get away with.
Yeah.
See, the nice thing, and I give a lot of thought to this, I actually used to be a communicator for the city of Seattle, which is where I started my emergency preparedness, I guess. And really, no matter what shit hits the fan, I go to the mountain.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, earthquake, go to the mountain.
Yeah.
What if it was a volcano?
Breakdown, go to the mountain. I have a single unified survival plan.
Volcanic eruption.
I live on a hill for a reason. And when it settles, I go to the mountain.
That, I think that's something to consider is what I said, is, you know, how long, there's a couple of things, like how long would you hole up before sticking your head up to see what's going on in the world? Like how long would you be completely shut off?
That's why you need the radio.
I am an amateur radio operator for a reason. And again, being a, you know, and actually I'm going to plug a event we hold once a year that is specifically for amateur, or it was specifically geared towards amateur radio communicators. However, there is tons of good information. We have an Emergency Communications Academy normally in April. I got to figure out when this year is. It's, what, $15 for a two-day academy, and we bring people from all over the United States and Canada to talk. And it's everything from radio protocols and emergency communication, which would bore you if you're not into that, to if you have a bag that is for you to pick up when there's an emergency, what should you have?
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess my question then would be, if the only people you're talking to are in Quebec and London, how long before you travel more than a mile from where you're at to see what's what?
You know, if I make it to the mountain, probably a really long time, because I just won't care. You know, these are basically as close to family as I have out here to go to, and we camp out there a couple times a year. We know we all get along, at least, you know, we all... Oh, and I'm a home brewer, which makes me an asset also. Because there is that recreational time.
Of course. So long as someone's on guard.
Yeah.
So does anyone else see any value in my idea of pulling up immediately and letting the voice blow over before venturing?
I'm a big supporter of the groups forming around action and around figuring out what's going on. And there are really cool ways of networking computers wirelessly. And so if you have your laptop, whether or not there's the internet, you can still... will somebody answer this? No? Okay, sorry. Nick, let me call you back in just a second. Okay, wait. I just lost my train of thought. Okay, so you can network your computers, and you don't have to have the internet in order to do that. And so you can, in high-density areas like Seattle, where a lot of people have technology, it's possible to communicate that way.
Where do you get the electricity from?
Well, that's another reason why I, being compulsive about these things, helps, because my computer always has a full charge.
For how long?
For at least a couple hours.
So if you can get a hand crank power generator, not for your laptop, but you can power your cell phone,
uh-huh,
and iPods, iPod Touch,
so
whatever.
No, you take one of the abandoned cars, you pull out the old bicycle,
uh-huh,
and I keep a power inverter in my car. I can run all of my 120 volts.
So,
at least
charge the laptop with that.
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh yeah. You know, my radios draw so little power that off of a charged car battery, I could listen for days. I could talk for hours.
I think my big assumption is that while traffic would go to hell, and maybe even traffic lights would go down, unless someone actively turns shit off,
the power is going to work for
the infrastructure will stay up on autopilot just because and it's not going to go down because people are dying.
It depends on how many people are still maintaining.
Well,
you have a period of time.
But it won't stay up internally, but it won't go off in 2 days.
But
it
could
go
off in 2 days. It's gonna be a random event because it's gonna be non-maintaining.
You know,
but power stations are not gonna be a big place to hit. You worry more about the hospitals, because you're not gonna steal something.
That's how you fool them. Go to the power station.
That's No one looked for you.
I also can tell you where, and I think it's still the case, but we're the largest generator sales. VA hospital on Tucson. I know it's the largest one in the hospital.
Practically walking distance.
I don't expect
you to predict this. Yeah, no, but I mean, based on what Willow was saying about maintaining communication with people in the city, I mean, I was just expecting it to be the first 2 days
before
she gets out to Kansas. So long as if it lasts for a month, then that supplies the first week that I plan to hide out, and then I'm heading to the country.
But on the road, you're going to need a radio or something, at least someone to talk to.
So maybe, I would say maybe round two of this is an amateur radio class for a radio device.
Yeah.
$12. And the other big thing that we haven't talked a lot about,
it's good to see you.
You've
good
mentioned to see it you. Is the biggest, probably, especially once you start getting out of the cities, the biggest thing you'll have to deal with is you're hitting Costco's and Depot's and stuff like that will be gangs.
The human predator. And again, planning for the human predator prepares you for any emergency. I'm big on the one plan. I don't want to have a different plan for every emergency.
Yeah.
And if I, predators are predators. And if they're trying to hurt me or mine, I am happy to take them out regardless of their shape or living status.
Because then that's a different moral issue as well, is you might be fully willing to kill a zombie, but it's going to be a bit harder to pull a trigger on someone who's just someone else who's, you know, competing with you.
It's true. There's a fantastic comic book called The Walking Dead, which is... They do hole up in prison for a while, and it's mostly about how if the zombie apocalypse comes, the things you don't have to worry about are not necessarily the zombies, it's the people around you, because bad disasters really change people. Yeah.
For the best.
And one of the two. People suck.
Yeah, and people suck.
That's why I wouldn't want to stay in one place with one group of people for too long.
Yeah, but you also have to build that trust if you're gonna.
It depends on
that's why I like the farm idea.
Depends
have,
on the
you
group
know,
you hold.
40 acres. Yeah. It's wooded. There's multiple structures, and we're a group that knows we belong. So even if you have a fever, I can go out in the woods for a week and not see
him. We discussed holding up in like a large department store.
Yeah.
The general consensus seems to be to get the hell out of town. Actually.
Yeah, because everybody would have
everybody that wants that. Again, with the human predator.
And yet, the
how much do you want to have to defend your space?
And department stores are all going to be
almost
in urban areas, so that a lot of other people are going to have the same.
And almost no department stores stocked firearms anymore. So you're down to defending your space with what you can carry with you and hand-to-hand weapons.
That's true.
And we didn't cover hand-to-hand weapons at all.
Or a Walmart, which would be the only place.
A Walmart, and Walmart's in some states quit selling guns. Okay. And actually, maybe across the board.
No. In
no,
California, they still sell guns in Walmart.
Because here they are. You know, my ideal, I think that's true. If I remember it, that's true. My ideal, if I could pick any one store to hold up in, and it would be Cabela's.
I don't think I even knew they had brick-and-mortar stores.
Oh yeah, there's one in Lacey. Oh, maybe that's the other outing, because Cabela's is the zombie apocalypse eating.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was raised halfway between the two original Cabela's, so they have a soft spot in my heart.
Well, yeah, you got enough dehydrated food to eat.
Oh yeah, I mean, they're a camping, hunting, fishing, survivalist mecca.
Yeah.
You know, we could feed, I mean, if us, just us, held up there, probably enough dehydrated food to live for a year. You know, enough guns and ammunition to outfit literally an army. Large plot of land surrounded by a parking lot. So
right,
you have a clear field of fire to defend yourself.
That was the big thing about the mall is a good spot to hold up. So you've at least had a large, clear field.
They generally have restaurants in them. They generally have camp stoves, grills, furniture, camp furniture.
If you can get there first and lock it down, that'd be pretty ideal.
Yeah, and the problem is locking, you know, the employees are going to be there first.
Yeah.
But, I mean, last time I was in a Cabela's, they had two on the shelf 50 caliber sniper rifles. and every single one of them. They have the gun library has a lot of the exotic guns, but they have the bullets for all of them. You know, that's where I go ammunition shopping often, because I can buy a crate. The hard part would be taking it, but, you know, they have every kind of gun that you could want. So enough food
so
for to live off.
And their stores are huge.
If you could figure out where a Cabela's warehouse is, you have a lot less competition.
Oh, for the shipping, yeah. You know I know a guy. Who's the vice president of the shipping.
Because so, I mean, that's the thing, is if you could find the depot that ships to like five states or whatever, you'd have even more of all the same stuff, and you'd have a lot
less guns, though, because those are more regular. Firearm shipping is very, very...
But you'd have lots of ammo, I would think?
Probably lots of ammo, yeah. So if you're carrying your own.
If you could find the guns at some place,
yeah.
Buy the depot.
I mean, he's already fucking got them, so...
Okay. You missed that part of the topic.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, for you at least, finding the Cabela's warehouse would be pretty
cool. And most of the people that I know are, I mean, like I said, I know lots of gun owners. We used to joke, it's 30-06, 12 gauge, and 45. Everybody should have one of each.
Sure.
Because that way we can always share ammunition.
Yeah.
How about this as far as a individual moral question? If you get to one of those stores first, as people arrive to seek shelter there as well, Who do you let in?
What's your skill?
Well, it's just like with the variables that we don't have to account for is how long is the incubation period on whether you're fucking sick or not?
Yeah. It would definitely be someplace that has.
You'd need to set up a quarantine area. Yeah.
You know. Yeah, but
that would make making those decisions much harder. I mean, if you're bleeding or not, you can come in. That's one thing. But like, if you have to wait a month to see if they turn, then
yeah, that makes it harder. But yeah, my basic question is, what do you bring to the group? I don't have dead weight.
Incubation like that, though. Like
I don't think I could be that cold-hearted.
Waiting a month.
I have kids.
Is a little bit.
Be that cold-hearted.
Sorry.
Well, I mean,
let's say we know someone's got bit. And we've observed the zombies. So I would say, like, nobody's accepted for a while. You observe the zombies, you learn as much as you can, and it might allow you to make much better decisions. Like,
so just for the first X number of weeks
or
whatever,
like,
you just
how
won't
long
take
it
anybody?
Takes them to turn.
Sure.
You know,
because
if you make them stay outside for a week, there's probably nobody left to take.
But that seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and what if you have a quarantine area? Then do you equip people in the quarantine area with weapons, or do you have someone standing by so if someone turns in the quarantine area, they can off them so they don't...
I would, in that situation, knowing how Cabela's is laid out, using that as an example, I mean, they have a lockable gun library.
Yeah.
You know, I would actually, if we had a small society, if all of us were there, maybe twice as number. Anybody who brought a personal weapon, I would let them keep it, but we would not be handing out guns to everybody.
Yeah.
They would be in the armory, maintained. Somebody's job would be to maintain them, or some people's job would be to maintain them. And because you don't want somebody getting twitchy. You know, the whole cabin fever thing.
Yeah.
You know, at what point do I have get cabin fever, crack, and sugar?
Because that's the big danger about letting people in is their unknown quantities.
That's exactly why I don't go to these
things. And that's why I go to the farm, because I know everybody who'd be
there. What do we do about recreation, then? Like, speaking of, you know, cabin fever, people getting bored, and shooting.
I carry a pack of cards in my coat all the time.
I don't want to play cards every single day.
I know probably, I could probably come up with a different card game for you to play a different game every day.
If you haul up in one of your departments, you'd have plenty of shit.
Yeah.
But realistically, in a situation like this, the first 6 months, you would just spend making sure you didn't die.
Yeah, training. I mean, that's the nice thing about someone like Cabela is I have enough ammo that I could teach everybody in this room how to shoot.
And fucking find out.
Not if you can't get a gun into my hands.
Well, everybody who would be willing to
find
shoot.
Find a pie plate and go play frisbee on the roof. You know,
yeah.
You can figure out stuff to do. Especially if
I can teach. But that's the other thing about Cabela is, you know, there would have to be a group who learns how to reload the ammunition. They have all the stuff there. There'd have to be a group who learns how to clean the guns. My daughter was learning it last night.
You would have
enough. They have all the stuff there.
You would have enough regular.
You have enough jobs.
Yeah.
And if, and the goal is specialization is bad, generally speaking. So you would be trained probably to shoot, to maintain the guns, and to reload. You don't want to.
So you'd be keeping busy.
Yeah. You have so much to learn. Any individual has so much to learn.
You'd be patrolling, or watching the perimeter, maintaining, like, you know, the sandbag defense on the windows. And
And everybody has something they can either learn or teach, usually both. So you would spend 6 months cross-training everybody to be a functional society.
But what about after the 6 months? Then is it the society that maintains the not going stir-crazy because then everybody's...
Well, at that
point, bonds and interactions.
2 years after the infection.
And that's this is where we don't have enough information.
Yeah, because on one level, if they're the mystical, like actual undead zombies, after 2 years, they'll effectively have dissolved. Like, the only thing you'll really have to deal with beyond a certain point will be ravaging packs of bastard humans.
Yep.
And so once, you know, a certain period of time has gone by, you can consider re-civilizing, and that will be.
And that also is a form of entertainment, is working on repopulating the earth. Just saying.
There's,
I will remove them from their property. I have permission, if Jazz is a zombie, to shoot them.
It's good to
and
get those things.
Make his kids take care of his
it's
children.
Good to get those things out of the way.
We have all sorts of packs.
They're actually in Russia doing a test for how long it would take to get to Mars and back, and do tests while there, where there's a group of people that are going to live in a craft.
So they're like,
yeah. Yeah, so they're basically cut off from the rest of society for, I think it's 6 years.
Well,
it's
the whole biodome experiment.
Right.
So yeah.
It's just to make sure that we don't go extinct.
Yeah.
It's the whole biodome experiment, basically.
Yeah.
So similar idea.
So there are ways of, I mean, we are doing the empirical evidence to see if it's possible to quarantine yourself.
And are they signing up for 60 years?
I mean, this is where you get into the...
It might be longer than that.
Yeah, the old bard tradition. Everybody sits around and tells a story or sings a song.
Yeah.
Or something. And that's also how we pass down information.
I have an idea for a book that I want to write one day, which is in a post-apocalyptic society, not zombies. Probably earthquakes or something, because I can picture skylines with buildings tilting up against each other. And this guy is a storyteller. He goes from little commune to commune, and they feed him and do whatever. And he sits down on the fire, and he's like, I'm going to tell you guys a story about a little boy named Harry Potter. And, you know, 40 years from now, no one's going to remember any of that shit. Like, they did a great scene in the Dragon movie Reign of Fire where these two guys are reenacting Star Wars for this little group of kids.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And the guy's hand gets cut off, and the guy says, I'm your father, and this group of little kids are like, it's fucking great.
But yeah,
I mean, that's what you would do. That's what you would have left. You would remember those things and pass them.
And a couple other thoughts.
That's how legends are started.
Yeah. I guess. That's how
some religions are started.
true. You know, and that actually brings up another good point. There's, you know, when it comes to stuff to take or stuff to have, you know, I think one of the things mentioned in Zombie Survival Guide is mid-80s Boy Scout program.
As opposed to a present day one?
Yeah, they've taken a lot of the good stuff out.
Yeah.
It's not as good, but because it has a chapter on first aid, a chapter on identifiable, or, you know, edible plant identification, a chapter on knots, a chapter on... I mean, it's the ultimate single book, little bit of everything.
You can buy a book that's a reprint. My brother used to have it called The Handy Boys Handbook.
Yeah,
and it's
was it set back here?
No,
I have the Handy Boys Handbook too.
Right,
I have
that. How to make a snow igloo and how to make a bow and arrow, and it's a lot more.
It's a reprint from the 1800s.
Yeah,
but I think that this also draws on. I mean, like, if I were packing for the zombie apocalypse, I would only bring utilitarian things, and I would go nuts from stuff to not do after what, like after I learned everything. If it was just me and I couldn't find anybody else. And that's why it's nice that there are so many different kinds of people in the world, because some of my friends would be like, and we need this guitar, and we need these finger paints, and be like, I'm not gonna carry that.
Yeah, you're carrying that.
Yeah. You're like, well, you carry that, and I'll carry all the food.
And the other thing I would say, so the next step up from the Boy Scout Handbook, which is awesome, there's a series of books called the Fox Brothers. They were written in the 70s, which was still being published. And it originally was actually a magazine. They came a 12-book set, and it was a senior class English project. New teacher, troubles getting his students to learn, because they were all backwater kids, and they didn't want to do anything. And so he was like, okay, we're going to do a project. What do you guys want to do? He made it totally up to them. They decided to publish a magazine twice a year about all of the stories and knowledge from the Appalachian Book.
That's awesome.
And they went to all these old people still living in the Appalachian Mountains.
That's crazy.
And collected them. And to this day, that senior class is still publishing a magazine. But the original volumes was a 12-volume set, and it's everything from the stories and the legends to
how to make a still, I would imagine.
Oh, how to make a still, how to make a log cabin,
right.
How to make a forge,
yeah.
How to make a, you know, and granted, it's bigger than a single Boy Scout handbook.
Sure, sure.
But it's got way more in depth. You know, how to smelt your own iron out of dirt.
Sure. That sounds very, very valuable.
So I actually have found the site. I at some point will order the set. It's, if I remember it, $150 for the total one, which is really, yeah, not bad at all. And, but they
so
also
it's
have
effectively
like
something like you know, the next step survival. It's like a,
yeah, yeah. And I mean, and they've done some specialty stuff too that gets into the entertainment. They have one of the appendix books is stories from Auntie Someone, and it was this woman
sure.
who lived in the mountains, and she had all this folklore about the people and, you know, traditions from the holidays and all this, and they gathered all of her stories and published a single book, and I think it might actually be all holiday traditions, but it gets more into the entertainment side. I mean, it has both.
I got a question just occurred to me. How would you maintain track of a pen?
Why would you need to?
Lunar cycles.
I don't know. Why wouldn't you?
Lunar cycles.
Lunar cycles would be the easiest.
Something to do.
Lunar cycles would be the easiest.
It seems like a basic step of civilization to have some grasp of when you are.
I would be so happy to not have a calendar.
Well, the reasons you would want to, or the easiest way would be lunar cycles, as long as you remember that it's a 29-day cycle, and there are 13 of them in a year, you could actually do pretty well. Otherwise, through seasonal shifts, which would be the agriculture would be the big reason.
I think, I think it just occurs to me because it's, I don't know, on
but
some
your
level.
Body is already has a
yeah, it's just sanity giving, and in the sense of storytelling or even history maintaining, I'd like to be able to say this is when this happened, at least like this week, as opposed to maybe it was in 2012 when this happened.
Do you think that our knowledge would disappear so fast after, you know, how long,
no,
however long
like
that zombies will last?
Once your present day calendar runs out.
Right, but I assume there will be watches that are still running after 2 or 3 years.
I mean, the other thing is to remember is that a calendar repeats every 20 years.
Who the fuck do you know that still wears a watch, though?
Okay!
You get a space in the bunker. What do you bring to the party? I know what day it is! See, it must just be some kind of creature comfort, but I feel like I wouldn't want to be able to...
Well, I mean, the calendar and the passage of time is an incredibly powerful mimetic tool that people are just... humans are really, really into. And so it makes sense as far as comfort goes, but as far as I'm personally concerned, I think that it's an arbitrary thing and that there are other things to worry about.
I think in reference to battling cabin fever would be a useful tool too, because then you can maintain traditions. You can say it's the 2nd February of...
It's your birthday. How would you remember your birthday?
Who cares when it's...
It's the 2nd Sunday of February. We're all going to go up on the roof of Cabela's and play football because it's the fucking Super Bowl.
See, I think, though, that it would add to cabin fever because you'd be like, we've been doing this for how many days? Instead of just being like, oh, it all fades away. Who cares?
Right. Like I said, the biggest thing to me would be, from the practical aspect, you know, seasonal.
Yeah.
Knowing that you know, in another moon cycle, all of our crops are going to be dead. Everything has to have been picked. And we're eating on stores.
But, I mean, do you really need to know, like specifically what time it is? Because you can see the
time, no, date.
Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to the date, you know, you can tell when the end of the season is coming. Like, you don't need to rely on the lunar cycles to know when it's, you know, beginning, middle, the end of the season.
A lot of it depends on how much foreplanning you do.
And to be fair,
I know it's autumn right now. I know, if I know that in, on average, in 6 weeks, if I know in 6 weeks, on average, is when the snows come and I will no longer be able to get anything out of the ground, that means I have 6 weeks to pull my potatoes up, get my carrots up, pull my onions up, get them drying because I need them in the winter. I have 6 weeks to make sure everything is harvested. I have 6 weeks to, have all of the vegetables that have to last the next 4 months. It's all about planning.
If you don't have a real good grasp on when it is, you could be taken in by herbs for fall, summer could go a month longer than you realize and you not notice. And on another level, he's got the same plan for regardless of what happens. So if it's not the zombie apocalypse, if it's something else that goes wrong that could change your perception of seasons, like nuclear winter or something, it would be even more important to be able to do this.
One thing useful about knowing what time it is that if you are sailing in the middle of the ocean,
you can tell
the longitude with an accurate watch.
Mm. And
latitude, you can just look at the stars and the sun.
I was also thinking of the calendar in terms of, like, a seven Super Bowl Sunday. You can give people things to look forward to if it's not a birthday or Christmas or what have you. Like, you know, there are things that you can say, we've been doing this for this long, rah, but you can also say, like, I have something in 2 weeks to look
Christmas.
Forward. Well, and that's one of those things that I think, even if the calendar went away, we would come up with those things.
Yeah, I'm Irish Catholic. I'll take any chance.
Any excuse.
But, like, the solstice
will be the same. Yeah, the solstices you can measure.
Yeah, that's true.
But even stuff like, we would create new traditions. Especially if you're living in a farm environment, because that's where a lot of these traditions come from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, you know, in 2 weeks our harvest is going to be done, and by God, we've worked our asses off. We're going to celebrate. Get her done and we can celebrate for a couple days before we have to knuckle down and start planning our hunting parties because we need meat to give us certain level. You know, there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
What are some sources of alternative food? Like, say, if the animals die because of the zombie apocalypse? Like?
Some funguses. I don't know them, but I know there are funguses. Other than that, beans.
Like I said, get a Boy Scout handbook has an amazing list of edible plants. And everything else aside, if you watch what, and this isn't 100%, but if you watch what plants other animals eat, it's more likely that they will be safe for you. They may not be overly nutritious because you may not digest them the same. But if you watch what a mammal eats, chances are they're going to be poisoned by the same thing.
If there's another mammal eating a plant, you kill the mammal and eat.
Well,
but then you can also have another salad,
but
too.
I'm talking about, like, a rat. like a rat, something too small to eat.
Okay.
You know, a groundhog, I'm sorry.
Wait, rats eat plants?
Okay, groundhogs. You know, and even a 22 would make a groundhog into less than a snake. They're just not that big.
Yeah. I was gonna take another break and then see if anyone wants to do specific presentations again and stuff.
We need to go pretty soon.
Okay.
I didn't think I thought I would offer.